My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramer. I'll be with my friends, just trying to make a little money. My job, not just entertain, but to educate, teach. Call me at 1-800-743-CNBC. Tweet me at Jim Cramer. In this business, we spend too much time on the winners and not enough time on the losers that may turn out to be winners. And that was the feedback I got about last Thursday's show opener, where I analyzed the prospects of the five best performers Dow Jones Industrial Average from the first quarter. So on a day where the Dow lost 240 points, S&P declined 0.2%, NASDAQ actually inched up 0.11. I want to answer the question people put to me, which is, would I buy any of the Dow Bow Wows? The dogs of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, based on the declines in the first quarter. Normally, I don't believe in the concept of a stock pivoting in such a short period of time. 3 months is not a pirouette, man. But I think companies can lay the groundwork, and I see some of them doing that. So let's get to the five worst performers from the first quarter, and I'll tell you the levels where the stocks could be enticing. By the way, I also want to take the liberty to include Walgreens, which was unceremoniously dumped.
Sell.
From the Dow, just after 5 years of its inclusion. Let's take them from the bad to the truly abysmal. We'll start with United Health, which is bad, the nation's largest health insurer, with a stock that fell 6% in the quarter. Now, this stock was hurt by higher medical costs, just like Humana, which was one of the worst performers of the S&P. That was down 24%. Yep, the managed care companies are still being hurt by the post-COVID hangover, where people who skipped getting surgery during the pandemic are finally getting treatment. I find this issue nagging. You know, when does it end? We can't tell. And then tonight, to add insult to injury, the health insurers got some bad news about the Medical Advantage plans they sell. The government's not allowing them to have much of an increase in their policies. This news came out just after the belt. It is pretty negative. So I think you get a chance to buy these stocks well below tonight's close. I predict downgrades or maybe even some price target cuts. I also thought UNH's stock might have come down this quarter past because of that hack for its Change Healthcare unit, which keeps track of revenue and payment cycle. The February data breach is being hailed as one of the worst ever to hit the industry. My friends who are in the cybersecurity business say it is just horrendous. But Humana wasn't hit by the hackers, and it was an even worse performer for the quarter. Of the six losers I'm covering tonight, UNH probably has the best chance for a bounce back from where it bottoms tomorrow or Wednesday. I just wish it fell more, although the 5% decline tonight today alone, plus another 5% tomorrow, makes it a lot more attractive. Next up is, wow, Apple. I'll be very careful about what I have to say about Apple here. First, I've said this $170 stock could trade down to $160, its old 52-week low, because the company's thought to have no growth or may actually have down revenues. If the latter comes true, Apple actually have a hard time staying at $160. We know that sales in China apparently were down 17% for the iPhone in February. Average selling prices of older models have come down, too. Bad sign. Plus, there seems to be an inventory bubble developing in phones. It's all bad, people. At the same time, even after falling 10% in the first quarter, the darn thing still sells for more than 25 times earnings. That's too high, given the negatives. Hence why I say it needs to come down. But Apple does have two things going for it. First is the developers conference in June, where we might hear about some new exciting stuff. And arguably more important, we'll see if management embraces Jensen Huang's vision of the Vision Pro as an Omniverse-enabled tool for the enterprise, not just a consumer product that sits in your closet, as so many people are telling me. Now, in his keynote at NVIDIA GTC event, Jensen did the unthinkable. He actually talked about doing business with Apple. The first rule of doing business with Apple is you don't ever talk about the name Apple. So he's got to be pretty confident of this stance. If Jensen can get his supercomputer Omniverse streamed to Apple's Vision Pro to build digital twins of factories or help car dealers or realtors move product, then I think Apple's screaming buy if it pulls back to the 150s. Of course, my long-term view has not changed. We own Apple for the trust, and I still say own it, don't trade it, because I am confident in the management team, and it's hard to swap out and swap in and swap back out all that nonsense trading. I don't like it, not one bit. Short-term loser, long-term winner? I think so. Third, there's Intel, which could really rally simply thanks to easy comparisons versus last year. On top of that, this morning, UBS raises price target on Intel based on a very compelling but theoretical sum of the parts analysis. Given that Intel was down 12% in the first quarter, I wouldn't be surprised if it could bounce. CEO Pat Gelsinger has at times demonstrated flashes of brilliance, but even more bright hubris. which is always good for 3 or 5 points from the faithful flock. All Pat has to do is say that margins are going to get better, and that'll do it. And that's pretty, hey, margins will get better. Of course they are. Fourth on the Dow's loser list is Nike. Now, this one's rough. The shoe business has become quite competitive, with New Balance joining Hoka and On, shooting at Nike. I think the consumer's rebelling against anything that costs too much right now. Nikes are considered expensive. I think we got some positive press about the China business, but it's U.S. I'm worried about. Now, we own Foot Locker for the Chapel Trust, and that's been a mistake, in part because it sells uninspiring Nikes. However, I'm beginning to believe that the whole lineup may be uninspired. Now, that said, historically, it's been hard to keep Nike stock down for long. I want to see this quarter. Though, because I believe the consumers stopped paying up for some things that they can get for less competition. For instance, just tonight, PVH reported and gave a really ugly forecast. The stock was trading down 20%. That will most certainly bleed over to all the apparel companies, including Nike. Fifth, there's the dishonorable mention. The expelled Walgreens down almost 17% in the period, not including the near 10% hit it took today. Now, we had CEO Tim Wentworth on the show Thursday talking about a game plan, and I think you can turn this thing around within the year. I know that's not within the month or the current quarter. Wentworth's basically turning the stores into real pharmacies, and that could take a little time to rebuild. I think you can pull it off, though, but there's no hurry to buy this one. This story's going to take a long time to play out. Finally, there's the worst performer in the Dow, and that's Boeing. And everybody on Earth knows this thing is a dog because it gets so much well-earned bad publicity. We know Boeing needs to use a lot of its cash to buy Spirit AeroSystems to get control of the fuselage. That whole gambit to offload the building and parts on the plane could did not include quality control. Only by acquiring Spirit, perhaps for about $5 billion, $1 billion above where it's trading, can this company assuage the angry regulators who haven't been appeased, even with the resignation of CEO David Calhoun. I believe they'll insist that Boeing bring in someone from the outside. Hard to blame them. And when they do, then you'll have a serious resumption in aircraft sales. But it won't be at the record pace that I've been hoping for, which means this one might be a long-term renter on the poorly performing list. Bottom line, though, the worst performers in the Dow include stocks that have been, let's say that they have both hair and flies on them, in a market that demands a pristine story, and there's nothing pristine about this list. Do not kid yourself. Let's go to Rich in Nebraska. Rich!
Mr. Kramer, good afternoon, sir. Hey, I have an interest in OKE. I bought it at the COVID dip at around $27, and now it's pushing $80. Still giving me some great dividends, but should I hold on to this one?
Like One Oak very, very much. And by the way, it still yields 5. Let's keep your position, and if it comes back down, I would actually buy more. That's how much I like it. Let's go to Vic, my home state of New Jersey. Vic!
Hey, booyah, Jim. First time, long time. Love your show. I try and watch every day with my daughter, 60-month-old Isabella. I got her set up with a 529. And
perfect. That's what I want. Compound. Reinvest. How can I help?
Love it. Listen, I'm on Prudential. Buy, sell, or hold.
A stock is only a dollar from its high in a market that I think is headed down because we're overbought. I want you, if anything, maybe a little schnitzel. Take a little off the table. And then if it goes lower, you know, we can buy it back. But right now it's up a little bit too much. All right. The dogs of the Dow so far have fleas, ticks, and even some broken bones in a market that demands a pristine story. They'll have viable levels eventually, but not yet. Oh, man, tonight, after the bell, we learned that recreational marijuana will be headed. It's going to be on the ballot in Florida this November. No, really, not an April Fool's joke. Just happened. Despite canopy growth tumbling today, could this news be bullish for the stock? CGC? I'm talking to CEO. Then several conglomerates are saying bigger isn't always better. So tonight, what we're going to do, I'm looking at the 3M new spinoff, telling you how to approach it. And I'm sitting down with Chipotle's top brass to find out more about this 50-for-1 stock split, what it means for the money, for your money, and, of course, what it means for the stock. So stay with Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
President Biden's latest State of the Union address a few weeks ago, White House began a new push toward cannabis legalization, or at least maybe the rescheduling of cannabis into something more like a high-risk prescription drug. Just in the marijuana stocks, they've all caught fire. Take Canopy Growth, long our favorite. We've followed for a long time because Constellation Brands owns a large stake in this one. A Canopy stock has surged from less than $3 before the State of the Union to a high of 10 and change at its peak last Thursday. Well, since then, it's sold off hard back to $7 and change after a nearly 13% pullback today. Even after these declines, though, I mean, it's still more than double since we started hearing about the pseudo-legalization. Let's check in with David Klein. He's the CEO of Canopy Growth Corp. You got a better read on the situation. Mr. Klein, welcome back to Mad Money.
Yeah, great to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I don't mean to blindside you, but literally a few minutes before we started taping, a Supreme Court of Florida decision came down which said that there will be on the ballot in Florida what looks to be full legalization. I mean, Florida's a huge state. This could be terrific for Canopy Growth.
Yeah, it's really good for us. It's good for the industry. Our edibles brand, Wana, is in the state of Florida. And look, Jim, this is just indicative of the research that we see that says about 88% of adults in America prefer some form of legalization. We need the federal government to catch up.
Now, the two things that you want for the government to catch up, one is you got to get these banking laws, right? And then the other thing is to switch to scheduling. Those seem like hard tasks. Do you have any allies or really just a couple of you guys just going alone?
Well, I think, you know, when we think about rescheduling, that is an executive branch decision. And I think it was a good sign for the president to come out at the State of the Union and say he's supportive. A week later, the vice president doubled down on that same message. And so we see that as maybe something that happens sooner than later. And that's really good for our businesses in the U.S. To get that rescheduling. It has a tremendous positive impact on our cash flows.
Now, if you did that, then I presume that there could be credit involved with buying, so it's not all cash. And if that's the case, then I think supermarkets would get involved, not just these one-off stores.
Well, I think a lot of the distribution is still going to be regulated by the state. So I think until we have maybe a more broad-based view on how we go to market, maybe at the federal level, we'll still rely on state rules. And state rules, for the most part, have what's effectively a liquor store model where you have to sell through individual retailers.
Oh, okay, the three-tiered system. I got it. Now, I'm interested in trying. We have a huge position in Constellation for my charitable trust. So we were trying to understand the Canopy Growth USA exchangeable shares offer. I know it's not easy, but can we just get a little clarity on what we're supposed to be doing?
Yeah, so simplistically speaking, we effectively own Wana, which is an edibles brand, Jetty, which is a vape brand. We own a multi-state operator in Acreage, and we have a stake in TerrAscend, which is another multi-state operator. What this vote really, and the vote takes place on the 12th of April, so next week, what the vote really allows us to do is to merge those businesses together and have them start running together to get top-line synergies and bottom-line synergies. The exchangeable share transaction with Constellation and any other investor that wants to take an interest in that just allows them maybe one more firewall, if you will, between the plant-touching business and Constellation Brands.
Oh, okay. Then that's much more simple. You know, I don't know why, but we were all kind of just puzzling over it. That is a very succinct way to look at it. Now, let's talk about some places that are really exciting for you. Legalization in Germany. I've always waited for Europe to become what I thought was going to be just rolled over with cannabis. This big deal for you?
It is. So we have two things going on in Germany. We're one of the top medical suppliers of cannabis to Germany. And the new legalization, by the way, the commercial benefits from that legalization will actually come through the medical channel. So benefits us there. We also have a brand called Storz & Bickel, which is a flower-based vaporizer brand that's actually been proudly headquartered in Tuttlingen, Germany, for over the last 20 years. And we think that as consumption rises in Germany, that will also provide a tailwind for our vaporizer brand. So, yeah, a lot of opportunity in Germany.
Now, I'd like to get a bit of an update on what I think is a turnaround of the core business, including Canadian cannabis. This is from your deck. Demand for quality products driving profitable growth of Canadian cannabis business. So, I mean, a lot of people may have said, you know what, this is just one of those high flyers, but not if you're profitable.
Yeah, you know, Jim, I think if we all rewind back 5 years, I think the investment thesis was right. Very large markets, strong macro trends. We're still seeing data that suggests that almost 70% of adults under the age of 35 prefer cannabis to alcohol. So a great macro trend to get under. I think maybe the market and many of us in the market got a little ahead of ourselves on how long it would actually take to really get regulatory reform that we need or to transition from the criminal market to the legal market. We're seeing a lot of tailwinds happen there. At the same time, we've repositioned our business so that we can actually generate attractive margins in a very competitive market like Canada. So we're really excited about being able to bring that capability to other markets like Germany and the U.S.
One last question, because you do know the alcohol business and Constellation. We're seeing a real decline in what I call the browns and the clears, the traditional drinks with people who are 21 to 26. Now, Brown-Forman does not think it's because of cannabis. I have to believe that, and not because of the GOP-1s, I have to believe that cannabis is an appropriate alternative, and that what you're seeing is a groundswell against something that's really sugar-based in favor of something that may actually be much more healthy than alcohol.
Yeah, you know, look, cannabis fits really well with kind of that Gen Z aesthetic where they really want to maybe keep more to themselves. It's more, relaxation versus, you know, supercharged celebrations and partying. So I think cannabis fits really well. The research data suggests that they're over-indexing on cannabis versus alcohol. And to your point, exactly because they don't want hangovers and they don't want the incremental calories and sugar that come from alcohol consumption. So while I remain personally bullish on alcohol, I also think that cannabis is a good substitute, and we're starting to see it show up in the data.
Well, I know I wanted you on because I've been waiting and waiting like you have to be able to get that right moment, and I think we may be at that moment. That's why I'm so glad you came on. David Klein, CEO of Canopy Growth, CGC. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay, Mad Money, be back after the break.
Coming up, April showers begin with a downpour of spinoffs. Will a breakup within this Midwest conglomerate be Minnesota nice? Stick with Cramer.
Regular viewers know that I love breakups. Because when a big company divides itself into smaller, more easily managed outfits, these bite-sized businesses typically do better. And Wall Street wraps them up. This week, you got not one, but two major breakups, with GE spinning off its power business as an independent company. I told you I like that very much. And then 3M doing the same thing with its healthcare division, and I haven't talked enough about it. So tonight, I want to give you a deep dive in these moves, okay, because it really does matter. I'm going to start with 3M's healthcare business, which began regular way trading was Solventum today, okay? Now, we know 3M's had a tough time for many years now, with the stock steadily falling, in part because of major litigation. They've been eaten alive by forever chemicals and faulty hearing aid lawsuits, the latter being from combat veterans, very sympathetic plaintiffs. Meanwhile, most of their businesses have slowed since 2018. 3M's peaked then. It's been a tough road, okay? But that's not the case for 3M's healthcare unit, which has grown steadily over the past 5 years. In fact, Solventum hasn't had a single year of negative organic revenue growth for the past decade. So the healthcare spin-off was all about freeing this terrific business from litigation-induced malaise at the rest of the company. So what are you getting with this Solventum? All right, this is a business that did $8.2 billion in revenue last year, split across four segments. More than half of its sales came from wound care and surgical solutions last year. Think everything from medical tape to advanced patient monitoring equipment. The rest of the business is split across dental solutions, health information systems, and purification and filtration. These are all high growth businesses. Management says each of these end markets can grow at a mid to high single digit clip going forward. I believe them. Lots of money in these aspects of healthcare, thanks to their aging population, plays right in their wheelhouse. At the same time, Solventum is plenty profitable. I'm telling you, this is interesting. As 3M margins have slid steadily lower for years, the margins at Solventum have held up just fine. Of course, they're going to take a small short-term earnings hit from consolidated costs that come with the breakup, which is typical. There are some additional complications here, though. See, the plan is for Solventum to gradually go from a 3M-affiliated business to a customer that's licensed as 3M's intellectual property. The parent company isn't just handing over its IP as part of the spinoff. Now, this is not ideal. Solventum frames the split from 3M as a quote, as an opportunity, quote, reposition for growth with a goal of getting its own growth rate in line with the growth of its end markets. Right now, it's lagging the industry. That's an opportunity. They'll look at their portfolio, choose which end markets to exit, which ones to invest further in, and they'll invest more into research and development than they could when they were part of 3M. I like that. Meanwhile, Solventum also plans to look for places to cut costs, and they said they're going to prioritize paying down debt over the first 24 months after the spinoff. I like that, too. I like a clean balance sheet. By the way, as part of the breakup, Solventum's taking on some additional debt in order to pay a dividend to 3M on its way out the door. That's not unusual. Even with that, I think the balance sheet's okay. Not ideal, but it's what happens, okay? Now, we don't even know if Solventum wants to return cash to shareholders via dividend or a buyback, but given the prioritization of debt repayment, I don't expect much on that front for a couple of years. That's a negative. Finally, 3M is only spinning off 80% of Solventum stock to its existing shareholders. They're planning to hold on to a 20% stake, which they want to gradually sell down over the next 5 years. That's a real long-term headwind if you want to own this one. Putting it all together, I more or less like Solventum's core business, but this is not the cleanest of stories, and their guidance for this year makes it clear that 2024 will be a rebuilding year for this newly independent company. Maybe people don't have the patience for that. The good news here, though, is the stock seems super cheap. Solventum traded down to around $69 today, the stock's first day of regular way trading. Given their full-year earnings forecast, that means the stock's only selling for roughly 11 times this year's earnings. That's cheap. By comparison, a company we like very much, Becton Dickinson, it is a similar play in the medical supply space, trades at 19 times this year's earnings estimate. Now, Becton Dickinson does deserve a premium because it has better numbers, but maybe not that much of a premium. However, while I can justify buying Solventum at these levels, you should keep in mind that many of these spinoffs tend to have a rough time in their first few months. Many people who get shares in the spinoff simply don't want them, and they gradually get shaken out over time. Maybe you're in 3M because you like 3M. You don't want a healthcare business. Now, we have seen this happen many times. Look, oh, the old Kellogg. They spun off their cereal business, but it's a pretty good business. W.K. Kellogg stock initially went from 15 to 10 for only rebounding to nearly 20% as of today. That's good. Danaher, how about this one? They spun off its water business at Veralto. We like that as part of the investing club. Stock initially tumbled, though, from the mid-80s to the mid-60s, but then it climbed all the way back to the high 80s. That's pretty amazing. So if you're inclined to buy Solventum, I recommend buying it gradually over the next 6 months because you'll likely get a better price than you get right now. But what about the former patient? 3M. Well, it's actually more of a parent. All right, now get this. This one's really tricky. And it's one that, like, my dad used to work for 3M, so I'm very sensitive to this. It's one of the greatest stocks, and I always wanted Pop's company to work. I haven't recommended 3M in a very, very long time because I hate playing litigation roulette. People who follow the club know this. But this spinoff of Solventum is part of a broader simplification of cleanup of an effort by the outgoing CEO, Mike Roman. It's a really smart one. Plus, 3M reached some major settlements on both big lawsuits last year, agreeing to pay more than $10 billion to settle the Forever Chemical claims, another $6 billion to settle the faulty earplug lawsuits. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that these issues can be put to bed, but I think the vast bulk of the damage has been contained, albeit at a pretty high cost. Now, if you buy 3M here, you are betting that the company can turn things around and they're cost-cutting like crazy. More importantly, you're betting that new management can right the ship. This stock rallied more than 10% a couple of days last month after CEO Mike Roman announced he'd be stepping down, transitioning to executive chairman. Now, clearly, Wall Street likes the 3M's bringing in a new leader. They're bringing in this guy, Bill Brown. Now, he did a fantastic job when he was running L3 Harris Technologies, one of the better defense contractors. We've been huge backers of Bill. He's a no-nonsense industrial veteran. I think he's a great choice. I'm still hesitant to give it a full-throttle endorsement, but I am so close. So right now, I feel better about this company's prospects than I have in so many years. I sure wouldn't stand your way if you wanted to start buying at some of this stock. That's right. I'm saying you can buy 3M right here. Let me give you the bottom line, though. This is really important. The 3M breakup is finally complete with Solventum shares trading regular way. While Solventum has a good but not great story, the stock fortunately has a darn cheap valuation. And you have my blessing to buy this one into weakness. Just remember that new spinoffs tend to be volatile for the first few months and go down. As for 3M, I know it's still risky. I know it is. But you know what? It hasn't been this attractive in years.
Buy.
You heard it.
Bye.
Let's go to work. Randy in California. Randy.
Booyah, Kramer.
Booyah, Randy.
Hey, I bought Moderna prior to them perfecting the COVID vaccine. That was the good thing. Unfortunately, I rode it all the way up and all the way back down and didn't take any profit. I'm still up, but my question is, in light of some vaccines that they're potentially releasing, should I sell Moderna?
No. I think Stefan Bensel. We had him on. And actually, I'll invite him back on again. I know he was on the network recently. I actually am a believer in the technology. I have been since I met him when the stock was at 16 at the J.P. Morgan conference, healthcare conference years ago. I want you to stay in it. And if anything, I'd be a buyer under 100. There, I really do believe in him and his technology. Let's go to Dan in Massachusetts. Dan.
Good afternoon, Jim. How are you?
I am good, Dan. How are you?
Good. You do a terrific job. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, partner. Appreciate it. How can I help?
Listen, Novo Nordisk, they got a couple good drugs in the pipeline now. They're doing very good, and they're a profitable company.
Yes.
They have two more drugs coming down the road. Should I invest more in this company? What do you think?
Actually, look, I got to tell you, for the club, we own Lilly, and we are betting that later in the first half of this year, we're going to get approval of a very important Alzheimer's drug. In the interim, Lilly's Mounjaro is selling really, really well, and Zepbound's selling really, really well. That's the one we want to be in. All right, now look, guys, this is a big, big recommendation for me. I was thinking about doing it for the club, but it's still a little early. The first one is Solventum. That's a darn cheap valuation. You got my blessing to buy that one in DeWitas. Just remember, new spin-offs tend to be volatile for the first month. And then the second one is 3M. And I like that. All right, much more Mad Money ahead. California's raised the minimum wage for fast food workers starting today. I'm sitting down with Chipotle's top brass to see how that move might impact the company's profit potential. And by the way, we want to talk about a split. I'm highlighting one market sector also that should have surprised you. Wouldn't have surprised you, though, if you're focused on stocks and not the bond market. So let's see. We got Chipotle on the stock split. We got some interesting ideas about the buybacks and home builders. We got a lot on this show. And, of course, we got rapid fire tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. Two weeks ago, Chipotle did something very smart, although few in this business will admit it. They announced a 50-for-1 stock split. In theory, splits don't matter. They don't change anything except the optics of the nominal share price. Hey, but in practice, lots of investors hate buying high-dollar amount stocks. A 50-for-1 split will lure in new investors, which I think is why Chipotle shares caught fire in response. Now, even though the stock's pulled back about 5% from its post-split announcement peak, it's still up more than 15% since we last spoke to them in February, after the company reported a fantastic quarter. So could have more room to run? Let's check in with Jack Hartung. He's the chief financial officer and, by the way, administrative officer of Chipotle. To learn more, Jack, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hey, Jim. Great to see you.
All right, first, Jack, thank you for bringing back Al Pastor, which we've had immediately. It's unbelievable. I'm sure the results, once again, are stellar.
Fantastic. It was one of the favorites, Jim, and I couldn't tell you about the celebration that people found out we were bringing it back. It's a big hit.
All right. Now, let's talk about something that is a big hit in our world, which is you did something that I know we've been urging people to do, CEOs, which is do a stock split. And a lot of them, they just come back and say, Jim, it's too expensive, too costly. The big funds don't want it. And not only that, you can go buy a fractional share. We've countered by saying that Sam Walton didn't feel that way. And Sam Walton, one of the greatest investors and one of the greatest creators of our time. So could you give us the history of why you felt it was okay to do?
Yeah, you know, Jim, we study this every year or so. We have our bankers come in and we talk about, okay, the pros and cons of doing a split. And cost was never really a big problem for us, but we couldn't really find a compelling reason until recently. And there's two reasons, really, that led to this split. One is our employees. It was getting harder and harder for us to get the right denomination because we reward our top-performing managers with stock in the company. We want them to celebrate our success with us. And it was getting harder and harder, where if you wanted to reward a manager with $4,000 worth of stock, you'd either have to award $3,000 or $6,000. So that made it a challenge. And also, when their stock would vest, the withholding made it tough, too, because the withholding could only happen in full value shares. And so if you had, let's say, $3,000 worth of value that was created, the only withholding you could accomplish was one full share, which basically would wipe out most of the value. And so for that reason, that was a big reason for us to do it. The second one, though, about a year ago, our investors started telling us that separately managed accounts were a real problem to get liquidity. These accounts typically, I'm sure you know this, Jim, they tend to be small. They tend to be in the 50,000 to 100,000 range. But in total, they're the fastest growing investment class. And they total now over $2 trillion. So it's a lot of small accounts that add up. So if you've got a $50,000 account, your choice is either to have no exposure to Chipotle or you have to over-index and get a 6% exposure to Chipotle when our stock is trading at 3,000. Those two reasons combined, Jim, cause us to say, let's do it. Let's go ahead and do the split.
Well, you know, that's somewhat remarkable. We've been doing pieces all day today about how the investor class has gone to the point where it's now 58%. And I always found it curious because I said, well, geez, are they, what are they buying? And you've hit the nail on the head. They're not buying these multi-thousand dollar stocks. And yet those are some of the best stocks. Now, did you get any pushback from some of the big mutual funds to say, hey, listen, now we got to, we pay per share and you just hurt us?
Not one, Jim. In fact, we were with some of our investors last week. We didn't have one question, one comment about it at all. And generally over the years, when we talked to our largest investor, they were largely indifferent. You know, a few of them brought up the separately managed account. But other than that, our largest investors, they care about our growth. They care about our results. They care about that we're still going to deliver on our promise of cultivating a better world. As long as we deliver on those strategies and deliver the growth that they've come to expect from Chipotle, they're very happy with the split.
Well, I imagine when you're going from, say, that you think you do $3 million, you're doing $3 million per average unit to $4 million. If anyone is unhappy about that and doesn't want to pay up because of a couple of pennies more, they're fools. What's the roadmap to four?
Yeah, the $4 million, Jim, it's going to be a lot of more of the same. The single biggest opportunity we have is to run great restaurants. And right now, we're at a stage where our managers have really rebuilt this muscle called throughput. Throughput has been really a hallmark of Chipotle. People love the Chipotle food. The only thing they don't like about Chipotle is walking in and having to stand in line. When throughput is really working for us, which, again, it's early days, but our managers are doing a fantastic job. We're seeing some of the fastest throughput we've seen in a number of years. And that means more customers in the front line. Of course, our digital business is still almost 40% of our business. So now we've got two significant businesses that are working really, really well at the same time. Of course, we'll still have a couple LTOs every single year. Our marketing team will continue to emphasize our real cooking from scratch, our real ingredients, and they'll continue to feature our employees and our restaurants. And that's a great branding message. And then we've still got our digital access point as well, including our loyalty members, which is now approaching 40 million members. So we have a lot of levers to pull. But I would say the number one is just running great restaurants every single day, including great throughput.
Now, you have done really amazing things with robots. I mean, when I was out and watching Jensen Huang and NVIDIA, I was thinking they should be learning from you. I mean, you created these Chippy you created, right? And then the avocado maker, you created that yourselves, right?
Yeah, so avocado, we're working with some outside parties, but we're making investments in these companies as well, Jim. So we're co-creating with them. What we're trying to do is make sure we maintain the essence of cooking in our restaurants. Like, for example, we're not going to have guacamole made outside the restaurant and brought in. But if we can make our team's jobs easier so they don't have to spend as much time cutting, coring avocados, they'll still hand mash it. They'll still cut the peppers by hand. They'll still cut the onions by hand. The guacamole you have at lunch is going to be made for you in that morning. But the idea of avocado will take away a time-consuming and a less pleasant task for our employees. There's another opportunity that we're looking at as well, and we're co-developing from a technology standpoint with Hyphen, and it's really automating the DML, our digital make line. So we have, as I mentioned, we have nearly a $4 billion business on our digital make line. We're making a lot of bowls, on that line. And if we can make that easier for our team, so at least the bowl making opportunity is done automatically, and then they can make sure that our crew can make sure that the sides are done accordingly, that we roll the burritos, make the tacos, the things that a Hyphen wouldn't be able to do. It's going to make their jobs a lot better.
All right, Jeff, one last thing. Obviously, the California law comes into place today. You do have to raise the salaries of people in California. Have you budgeted that for the year, how that will go, and are you ready for it?
We're ready for it. We haven't raised yet, Jim. We didn't want to raise prices on April Fool's for obvious reasons, but this week we will take an increase. Our approach was going to be just to break even, just so we can offset the impact. It is a significant increase in wages. Even though our wages are generally above others, it's still going to be a high teens, almost 20% increase. We do think we will fare well in this. We do think that we offer a great value. In California, even though costs of doing business are higher in California, a burrito before this price increase is about the same as it would be in the middle of the country. So we've had great value in California. We're going to have to spend some of that value, though, to try to offset some of the wages.
I understand. Now, just so people know, I think this is important, that if you had invested $750 in your stock, it'd be, when you came public, it's worth about $100,000. And I think that anyone who's worried about what a stock split could do from the institution would be able to think about $750 going to $100,000. Well played. Jack, it's great to have you back on the show. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Jim. Thank you.
That's Jack Hartung, CFO of Chipotle. What a story, guys. And now you're going to be able to buy it in the split, which is what we really want, because we know that you don't want fractional shares. You want the real deal. Mad Money's back after the break.
When we return, master the markets one stock at a time. The lightning round is up next.
And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the lightning round. Great round. We start with Jonathan, Pennsylvania. Jonathan.
Booyah, Jim. Always a privilege to speak with you.
I'm so glad you called. What's up?
Jim, you should know, and your staff should know, the Investing Club is making me a more mature and a more disciplined investor.
That's what we want. Thank you all. Thank you. That's what we want.
You know, I love how the club marries the technical, fundamental, and the equally important emotional aspects of this. So,
then we're getting it right for you, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for all the hard work. Hey, real quick, what do you think about this company that's usually a steady Eddie, Tyler Technologies?
That's a very well-run company. And I got to tell you, that government business is a good business, and I think it's a buy. I like it that much. Let's go to Shara in Pennsylvania. Shara.
Hi, Jim. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, you're quite, quite welcome.
I saw your daughter last week, too. Great to see her.
It's so happy. We're so happy. Thank you so much. We're so happy.
So I've been a long-term shareholder with Cisco, and I don't know if I should sell and get into something else. Or just
no, you're fine. I mean, I like the Splunk deal. I think it's going to give a couple of quarters of some pretty good lift, and you got a 3% yield, so I would certainly hold on to that. And thank you for mentioning Emma. It really means a lot to me. Let's go to Dave in Illinois. Dave!
Dr. Kramer, happy new beginning of the 20th season of Mad Money with Jim Cramer, my good mad friend.
We've been around. Thank you, Dave. We've been around. How can I help you?
Jim, this stock provides end-to-end solutions in e-commerce for large parcel goods. GigaCloud Technologies is a horse, up some 50% on the year. It seems to me to be a hidden gem. Jim.
Dave, I've got to tell you, I do not know GigaCloud. Dave has stumped me. Dave from Illinois has stumped me. I'm going to get Ben Stoto down. Get Ben Stoto down here right now. We are not going to let this happen. We have more work to do, and we will get it done. Let's go to Charles in Texas. Charles.
Hi, Jim. Charles Riley calling from Huntsville, Texas.
All right, Huntsville, Texas. Not the other one. The other Huntsville. Right, the other Huntsville.
Yeah, Huntsville, Texas.
Right.
I want to know what you think about a stock that caught my eye that seems to have some good upside. That stock is KGS, Kodak Gas Services.
Well, let's ring the register. That thing is just, no. I mean, I cannot count. That stock's going up too much. I am ka-chinging that one. I'm ka-chinging it. Let's go to CJ in Florida. CJ.
Hey, booyah, Jim.
Thank you, CJ. What's up?
I'm a long-time viewer of yours, and thank you for sharing all your wisdom.
Thank you.
And helping people gain wealth and keep it.
Thank you.
So, I wanted to get your take on a stock that I think you were in favor of just maybe a month ago, PLTR.
Palantir, yeah, I like it. I thought they had a good quarter. They have a good defense business. I like IT defense work, and they own that franchise. It's very, very positive. Let's go to Mary Jo in New York. Mary Jo. Mary Jo?
Yeah?
You're up. It's Jim.
Oh, booyah. Booyah, Jim Cramer.
Booyah.
From the horse raciest little town in the great Northeast, Saratoga Springs, New York.
Oh, I love Saratoga. I'm on Adirondack 46er. People don't know about that. Many in winter.
My question concerns United Airlines. Bought some in November. It's up about 25%. Your thoughts?
I think you got a nice gain there, and I would do some ka-chinging. I think that's terrific. It's an airline. All airlines are trades. They're all trades. Marcus in Georgia. Marcus.
Yeah, booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Marcus.
All right. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling for the stock. It's been beating earnings the past few quarters. What are your thoughts on Vita Coco?
I think Vita Coco is a good stock. I'd like them to come on. I mean, that's a nice little story. And you get a nice little story like that, it could be like a Celsius. You never know. You just keep going up, up, up. Let's have them on. Let's go to Julie in Minnesota. Julie.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
So I started trading Fastly back in late 2020, and I held on to it then, and then the stock started to fall, so I purchased more over the past few years to average down my cost.
Right. That's not one of my faves. What can I say? I'm not going to endorse that stock. I didn't think the last couple quarters were that good. Maybe someone takes them over, but I see nothing that makes me want to buy it. And that, ladies and gentlemen, conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, how did home builders thrive in a rate-wrought environment when we return?
We always have to watch the Fed. We always have to watch the bond market. But you can't become a slave to either if you're trying to make money in the stock market. I say that because if you took your cue completely from the Fed or the bond market over the past couple of years, you end up being dead wrong. I mean, like, just horrible.
They know nothing!
If you only watched the Fed and the yield curve, you were told that that's a terrific recession, something that wasn't taken as gospel but totally led you astray. To put it bluntly, the focus was wrong if you were trying to pick stocks. I want to demonstrate that with the single most obvious group that you would have gotten very wrong if you only cared about the Fed and the yield curve, and that's the housing stocks. Faced with an inverted yield curve, where short rates go above long rates, a classic sign of impending recession, something, by the way, that happened 2 years ago to the day, coupled with a Federal Reserve that seemed determined to break inflation by any means necessary, the home builders, well, they should have been obliterated. The more you knew about the Fed's next move, the more you should have been able to predict that anything housing-related would have been a disaster. But as I laid out in a larger think piece I did for CNBC Investing Club members this weekend, one I think you should read, the real disaster was betting against the housing stocks. Why? In part because the economy held up much, much better than anyone expected 2 years ago. There was no recession. There was no reckoning. But also because the home builders were very smart. During the whole expansion, rather than putting lots of money to work building houses, they put their money to work buying back stock.
Buy.
In the last 5 years, the home builders have shrunk their collective share count dramatically. Lennar's gone from 286 million shares to 246 million. Toll Brothers, 146 to 104. Pulte, 277 to 212. KB, 87 million to 76. And D.R. Horton, 373 to 332 million. Unbelievable. In retrospect, the share count reduction was what mattered, not the Fed or the inverted yield curve. In a world where 22% of the S&P 500 is held by passive index funds, a company that wants to move its stock up just needs to buy its shares aggressively. I checked a dozen industries this weekend, and the more the stocks bought back, more of the companies bought back stock, the higher the stocks went. Sure, there were NVIDIA-like instances out there that could roar without a big repurchase program, but for the most part, sectors where companies bought back stock en masse were the better performers. Why bring this up right now? Well, the home builders were crushed today because interest rates tore higher. While the market's technically overbought, according to the S&P Oscillator that I follow, I think you should be a buyer of the home builders when we aren't overbought any longer, as they have been a propensity to shrink the float on any one of these big declines. When I speak to the executives in the group, I keep hearing the same thing. The home builders are flush, in part because housing prices are still up 40% from 5 years ago. They believe their stocks are too cheap versus the land they're sitting on, so they choose to buy back their own shares and shrink the float. Yeah, it's an odd conundrum. If these companies build too many homes, then the prices will come down regardless of mortgage rates. So why not keep the stable of new homes low and buy back stock cheaply? It just makes too much sense not to, especially if the environmental and zoning laws make it hard to put up new housing. The moral of the story, if you or we just focus on the Fed or the bond market when you buy stocks, you're going to miss any chance that comes from stocks that are plainly just too cheap and must be bought on any weakness.
Buy.
I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise you I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.